Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you, Sonny. You don't have to clap. That was beautiful. Well, I got five of the reindeer. There's a Pepe, and Chuy, and Güero, and Chino, and Rudolfo. Rudolfo is the one with the red nose. He has a drinking problem, but we're hoping to get him into recovery soon. Well, thank you for being here tonight. It's Christmas Eve, and I know that you all are very busy and a lot of things going on. You've probably already been to a couple of Christmas parties. You've probably already made a couple of Christmas events. And it's really easy to get super busy this time of year. But the challenge in getting super busy around Christmas is that sometimes you can easily miss the message of Christmas. That in all of the craziness and all of the celebrating, you get on the other side of it and you never have a time when you just kind of get quiet and think and grab a hold of the real meaning of Christmas. And so that's why times like this are pretty special, where you kind of put the brakes on a little bit and you gather together in a community of faith with new friends and family members, and you remember. I had an incredible experience in the 4 o'clock service. This is my first Christmas here at Torrey Pines, and it's no secret, I have fallen heads over heels in love with this congregation. I mean, I feel like I'm one of the most blessed men that's ever lived, that I get to pastor this church. Well, my family's having a family reunion, and they're here up by Del Mar. It just happened that they came here. And so about 25 members of my family from El Paso and Austin and New York, they all have congregated here and at my cousin's house up in the Del Mar area. And so these are the people that have loved me since I was a baby. You know, my aunts, you know, and my uncles and my cousins and all that stuff. So, you know, they know I'm a pastor, so we're going to go to Robert's Church, you know, and check it out. And they came, and they had 2 rows of my family at the 4 o'clock service, and it's like a memory for the rest of my life, you know. And so it's just, I'm kind of really happy today, and I'm really happy that you're here. I wanna take a few moments this evening to share the meaning of Christmas from Scripture. But it's a Christmas story that you might not be familiar with. You see, the gospel really comes from 4 biographies of Jesus that are in what we call the New Testament, the second half of your Bible, written by 4 different people with each one of them a unique perspective, a unique way of presenting what they saw. But this isn't weird. It would be weird if they all agreed. Because if 4 of us witnessed an accident, let's say, and we were interviewed by the cops, if we repeated every word the same and every detail the same, the cops would throw out our testimony because they knew that it wasn't legit. We were in cahoots. They would expect there to be differences, and you saw it from this side, you saw it from this side, you noticed this, and you noticed that. And that's how the Gospels are. Each one is unique. And so when you see the Christmas story, you see the nativity in your mind and the wise men and the shepherds and the donkey and all that kind of stuff, that's really an amalgamation of details from the 4 different Gospels. And so there, some of the uniqueness is, for example, the Gospel according to Luke is written from the perspective of Mary. The Christmas story in Luke comes from the perspective of Mary. The Christmas story in the book of Matthew, this comes from the perspective of Joseph. Mark, he actually skips the whole birth of Jesus, and he starts his book out with the baptism. I think he probably thought, you know, Luke, you know, he's got Mary's view, and Matthew, he's got Joseph's view, and the shepherds aren't returning my phone calls, so forget it. So he starts with the baptism of Jesus. Now, then there comes the Gospel of John. If you've ever read, and I hope you read with me beginning this year, the scriptures together, Matter of fact, on the first weekend, January, I guess that's 8th when we come together, I'm going to teach how I do devotions and how I'm going to do devotions all this next year. And I'm going to invite you to join me in that. And together, we learn this really cool way of receiving from the Word. And it's just spending time with Jesus every day. It's really cool. You're going to dig it the most. So we'll do that January the 8th. But when you read Matthew, Mark, Luke, and then you come to John, it's like John is different. Matthew, Mark, and Luke are very eyewitness kind of accounts of facts and so on. But when you read John, you see it is a much more polished and beautiful portrait. It just sounds different. It's a unique perspective. And the perspective that John gives us on the birth of Jesus is also very unique. It's a theological perspective. Whereas the other three are like from ground level, John gives us the view of the birth of Christ from like the 30,000 foot level. It's really cool. And in that description of the birth of Jesus, he links together the creation of the world and the birth of Christ. The creation story in Genesis and the birth of Jesus. Listen, John chapter 1. In the beginning, the Word already existed. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. He existed in the beginning with God. So he's describing Jesus by using one of his titles, the Word, or in Greek, it was the word logos. Now, it was not a word that John made up. The word logos is a word that was common in Greek thought. All of the philosophers used it. Logos was something they were searching for. Really, the word logos means the voice, the expression of a thought, that which gives meaning to all things. So the philosophers of the day were all looking for what gives meaning to all things. What is that central truth that helps us understand what life is all about? So John says, in the beginning was the logos, and the logos was with God, and the logos was God. Jesus is the logos. Pretty amazing. So then he goes on. God created everything through him, and nothing was created except through him. The Word gave life to everything that was created, and his life brought light to everyone. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness can never extinguish it. I mean, I believe John gives us the big picture, the big picture perspective of what's happening at that birth of Jesus. He claims two things. When Jesus is born, life and light come into this world. Jesus brings life and light into our present darkness. And let me tell you something, baby. We need light and life now more than ever. You don't need to be a Jesus follower to see that darkness is trying to overcome light in this world. Every morning, I don't read newspapers anymore. I get my news online. And from my iPad, I read different newspapers. And every morning, I'm just like, what? I mean, the war in the Middle East, what is just happening right now in Aleppo, and some of the incredible savagery that happens, like in all wars, is happening in that war? That the displacement of millions of refugees. I mean, it's really easy to say, you know what? Stay where you are. We don't want you over here. And I get that. But you've got men, women, boys, and girls who are in their land, and if they stay there, they're going to die. They're going to die horribly. But the problem is, nobody wants them over here. So they don't want them over here, but they can't stay here. And it creates a desperation that you go out in a boat that is almost certain death because of the level of desperation. And the number of these kind of refugees is now numbering in the millions and growing every day. And what about terrorism? I mean, a truck drives through a Christmas fair in Germany. In Australia, a plot was just foiled. And every time you pick up the paper, you see another incident. It's almost like this darkness is coming on strong. And then the fear and division that is so present in our polarized political culture in our country right now. Buckle up, man. It's going to be interesting 4 years. And then hate crimes. Just what? You did what because of why? And then shootings. I could go on and on. And I'm really glad I could encourage you tonight. That's a joke to lighten the mood, man. The fact is, darkness is still trying to overcome, and you might feel the darkness, and you might even be experiencing fear as you look at the world right now and where the world seems to be heading. And I want you to know that Christmas is all about Jesus is the light of the world, and when he came into this world, light appeared, and it pushed back the darkness. And today, Jesus is pushing back the darkness in this world and in our lives, if we let him. John continues, the one who is the true light, who gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. So the Word became human and made his home among us. He was full of unfailing love and faithfulness, and we have seen his glory, the glory of the Father's one and only Son. Christmas is all about Jesus, the light of the world, showing up in the darkness and bringing light to our broken world and to our broken lives and offering us life with him. But with God does not always describe how we relate to God. And I want to share four really dangerous approaches or operating systems that many people take towards God. And then I want to share the approach to God that I believe Christmas is all about. So one way that people live out in their desire to experience God is, we're going to call it life over God. Now, life over God is how many people relate to God. Basically, we are over him. We live life really without God. We rarely give him any thought or any mind. God's, it's an interesting concept, but it's not part of our daily life. We are free from any kind of religious constraints. That's for suckers, you know? And so we live over God. We are the center of our universe. And to be honest with you, sometimes I find myself falling into this trap. I get so busy and so self-sufficient that I almost live as if, you know, I didn't need God. And this view is really described earlier in history as deism, which deism believe, many of our founding fathers were deists, by the way. They believe in God. If you ask somebody, do you believe in God? Yes. You could even ask them, do you believe God created the earth? Yes, I do. Okay? But here's the view. The view is like a master watchmaker. He created this incredible earth, all these galaxies and all that kind of stuff. And then like a clockmaker, he wound it up and set it going. And then he checked out. He went to Cancun. And so now we live in this world that is beautiful in all of its rhythm and all of its creation and all of its systems. But basically, we don't need a personal God. The universe runs without direct involvement from God. But we have an instruction manual, let's call it the Bible, to know. So we live our lives looking for secrets to happiness and how to live well and how to love one another and how to do unto others as you would have them do unto you, all of those things. But we're not living with God. We're over God. We're running the show ourselves. Another approach that people take, we can call life under God. This approach views God as a cranky dictator who is always in a really bad mood, and his number one concern is our behavior. That he's ticked and he's kind of frustrated with us. And that God spends his time walking up and down the hallways of heaven going, oh, myself, myself, what am I going to do with them? And he... That he's just waiting for us to mess up, waiting for us to look at that, waiting for us to do that, waiting for us to think that, so he can bring down judgment, because that's what God does. It's so real in some people's mind that they even wrote a song. It goes like this. You better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. God is coming to town. He's making a list, and he's checking it twice. He's gonna find out who's naughty or nice. God is coming to town. He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake. He knows when you've been bad or good. So be good for goodness sake. And I'm telling you, this approach keeps so many people from coming to Jesus because they look at our lives when we live this approach. They go, man, if God's making you that miserable, I don't want any part of him in my life. God is this cosmic killjoy that if you dig something, if you're having fun with something, then God's agenda is to take it away from you. Because God is not about you enjoying anything. And you think you're exaggerating, Robert, but I'm telling you, so many live under this thing. This creates these moral Christians who seek only to find God's blessing and avoid his punishments. And this kind of life does not deliver us from fear. It does not connect us to God. Matter of fact, it keeps us running scared. A third approach is those that live life from God. In this approach, God becomes the divine butler, a cosmic therapist. He is a holy vending machine. And he dispenses all the things that we desire. And people and churches that fall into this, it's what is known as the prosperity gospel. And prosperity theology teaches that if you give God 10 bucks, he's going to give you back 100. That's a good deal. God becomes one big Ponzi scheme. And the people that really typify it are sometimes these really hardcore television preachers with the snappy suits and the crazy hair. Matter of fact, you know how much they bought into it, the higher their hair goes. And really the key to you get this blessing is you send them $1,000. You do the math. Yeah, that vending machine working good for them. So you hear things like, make Jesus your choice, and you can drive a Rolls Royce. You know what I'm saying? So in this approach, God simply exists to meet our needs and our desires. But what that creates is people who are just consumer Christians who seek God for what they can get. It's all about me, 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 me. It's life from God. His universe revolves around us. And then the last approach that I want to mention before I give what I believe is the Christmas story approach is those that live life for God. This view sees God as a rigorous personal trainer what God cares about is the mission. And God exists to train us, whip us into shape, and get us out there impacting others. God is this guy who drank 8 too many Red Bulls, and he's constantly pushing us to do more. And no matter how much you do for God, it's never enough. There's never any rest. It's like CrossFit for Jesus, 24/7, 365 days. And this, when people start getting into this, you can tell because they get this like crazy look in their eye, you know? They're like, hey, what's up, homie? Oh, wow. And it's like they're always looking for their next assignment from God. And boom, 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 7:30 in the morning on your door. Hey, wake up. Can I tell you about Jesus? What? What are you talking about? See, the problem with as noble as this looks, this I'm here to do stuff for God, basically the focus is not God himself. It's what you can do for God. And what it produces is tired, stressed out people who have little joy and little margin and do not spend their life loving and enjoying God and loving and enjoying the people in their lives. And man, I saw this close up and personal when I first came to Jesus. When I first came to Jesus in the Jesus movement in the early 70s, I was 17, and a bunch of us came to Christ. Some of them were some of my friends that were in a gang called the Bandidos, a motorcycle gang. And they came powerfully to Jesus. And like, man, one of them, Nando, and he just went for it. He was all on fire for Jesus. And man, we got to tell everybody, and we've got to serve him. And I just watched this like comet. And one by one, they fell away, fell back into their own lives, almost out of pure exhaustion. Because they came to know Christ in a season when it was, we got to get out there and get the gospel known to everybody. and they lived their life, it was life for God. And what makes these four things so challenging is that each one of them does have an element of truth. This business of being over God, yeah, God's principles and instructions do better our lives. And this thing of being under God, we should fear God in a healthy way of reverence. And yes, this from God, yes, God does bless us and he does pour into our lives. And this for God, yeah, God does invite us into mission. But if one of these four becomes the primary approach or goal or understanding, it will eventually lead us away from God. God then exists as a means to an end rather than an end in himself. You're seeking God for his blessing, his protection, his help, his assignment. And in all of these approaches, God is not the treasure. He is an avenue for a different treasure. But there is a much better way. And it's what Christmas is all about. Christmas presents us with a different approach to God. And it's this: life with God. In this approach, God is a loving Father, represented by that triangle, who then sends his Son that we might be set free from darkness in this broken world, and he brings us into his very heart and shows us his love, sets up his kingdom, sets us free from toxic religion, and he saves us from sin, so that he can be with us now and for all eternity. You see, it's all about the difference between his presence and his presence. Let me explain. How many of y'all excited about opening some of these things tomorrow? Mm-hmm, me too, bro. Mm-hmm. Or if you're Mexican, tonight. Now, this is fantastic. And when you're young, and whether you open your presents on Christmas Eve, like my mom's side of the family did, or on Christmas morning, like my dad's side of the family did, when you're young, it's really all about this. This is, oh my God, when you're little, oh man, you rip up, oh yeah, I got this truck, I got this iPhone, it's all about this. But then something begins to happen, and you begin to realize that this is simply a representation of the heart of the person that's giving it to you. That someone gives you something because they love you and they want to express that love to you. And all of a sudden, this is simply an indicator, and it helps us understand this, the heart of the person that is gifting us like this. What we begin to understand is that the present of Christmas is God's presence in the person of Jesus. The advent of Jesus is what sets being a Christ follower apart from all other religions. We are affirming that Christ is indeed Emmanuel. You've heard, and your name will be Emmanuel. You know what that means? The virgin will conceive a child, it says in Matthew. She will give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel, which means God with us. This is what Christmas is all about. God wanting to be with us in relationship. He wants to be with you. Life with God. Not life over God. Not life under God. Not life getting from God. And not life working for God. His primary desire is to be with you and with me. Through the hurts and through the happiness, in the blessings and in the challenges. Now, I fall into those four traps regularly, and I need to hear God's heart regularly, that the whole goal is God with you. What does that look like? What does it look like to live God with you? What would it look like if you were to live your life with your primary purpose? I want to live life with God, Emmanuel, God with me. Well, I'll tell you this, it looks different for every person, because every person is in their own context. Every person is facing their own realities. I've seen people this week, people very, very near to me, experienced tremendous tragedy this week. Heartbreaking tragedy this week. But I've seen what it looks like, God with them. Matter of fact, I want you to hear a story about two people that are part of our East Lake network of churches and how they're living out life with God and experiencing Emmanuel, God with them, loving them, strengthening them, leading them. Watch this. I'll be back with a few more remarks.
Haley was 18 months old and she got pneumonia, and her pediatrician called in a panic and said, "You need to go to the ER right now." So it was found out that Haley had basically a giant hole in her heart.
She was in the beginning stages of heart failure.
She was scared. It was probably the worst moment as a mother, watching your little girl fall asleep, knowing that she's gonna have open heart surgery.
The surgery was 9 hours of waiting.
I think it was the first prayer I had prayed in years. "God, if you are real and if you are loving, please protect her."
We weren't in a relationship with God. It wasn't something we were looking for or searching after. But listening to all those other people praying around us, and like, I think it was in those moments, God was with us. She was knocked out for 9 days. The first word out of her mouth was juice.
She wanted juice.
I think in that moment it was like, she's awake, everything
yes.
is good. And
yeah, there was that
someone
clip.
Get her juice. Yeah.
While Haley was still in the ICU, we actually found out that we were pregnant with the baby boy.
In that time frame, we slowly started getting back into church and attending Eastlake.
We were serving at the church,
mm-hmm.
and we were in growth groups. We had found a relationship with God. And then a few years later, we added another little girl. Obviously, everything we went through with Haley, all of our kids after her were checked while I was pregnant for heart defects. And Mia came back that the doctor's like, "I think I see something." It's less severe than Haley. She too has holes in her heart. The day of surgery for Mia was totally different. We had our growth group come, I think in like 2 hour increments. I mean, they had it planned out to be there with us. Why God? Really switched to how is God going to use us? And God has a plan for our family.
Yeah.
And we were almost excited to see what that plan was going to be.
Yeah.
Because we knew that we had a purpose.
We'd been home for a while, things were good, recovery was done, I had a job. Just life was rolling along smoothly.
We found out that Pastor Nathan and his wife Brooke were going to be planting a church.
It took a long way for them to decide and figure out that they were going to Temecula.
They asked if we would go with them. And we said no. That's ridiculous. We have a home here. We own our home here.
Our kids are in school.
Go to school right there. Our church family is here. Nathan and Brooke started doing interest meetings or launch group meetings. He made the right choice and asked us to go up for the first one.
We just thank you so much for all that we've seen you do.
Amen. On the car ride home, I said, "I love those people." Like, it instantly felt like home. Do you hear the saying of doing crazy things for God? But either you have never met anyone who's done something crazy, or you just don't ever think it's gonna happen to you. It just so happens that we were in that position. He was not tied down anywhere for the first time in our whole marriage. The Navy wasn't telling us where to go. And we had a house that we could sell. And our kids, they're resilient, right? I mean, they can move. And the only reason for no was, again, just fear.
Thanksgiving of 2000, 15, we moved. We brought this network, this DNA thing that we've been so a part of, and we just brought it here to Temecula. We're gonna continue to see people get baptized up here and take students to camp and watch 20, 30 of them give their lives to Christ.
From where we've been and to wherever we're going, we have that faith that God is going to be with us through all of it.
That's just one story. Every one of your stories could be up there as well. I don't know what kind of year you've had. I do know you've had challenges. The surgery may not have ended well. The cancer might not have gone away. Your loved one may not be here this Christmas. But I want you to know that Jesus came to be your Emmanuel. God with you. No matter what you face, no matter what you go through, He wants to be with you, living life with you, carrying you through it, never leaving you nor forsaking you. In a moment, we're going to have a final song. And then I'll come up with just the last instructions and pray a blessing. But during this song, I'll tell you how this could be the greatest Christmas of all. That if you just think it through and say, okay, where have I been? Have I become about life over God, me running the show? Or have I lived under God, trying not to displease Him and not trying to keep Him from being too mad at me? Or have I been living life trying to get from God, me, me, me? Or have I been so busy trying to live for God that I have forgotten what it's like to live with God? And you can make the adjustment, you can make the change, you can begin the relationship very easily. We say in the East Lake community that God is just a half turn away. We just turn to Him. And you can pray, Lord, I pray that You would help me live life with You. Come into my heart. Come into my life. Let's do this together, Lord. I want to experience Emmanuel, God with me. And if you do make that decision, make sure you let us know on your Connect card. Just click, I've been restarted my life with Jesus, or I've begun my walk with Jesus. Put your email address and I'll send you an email with some help in getting started in your journey.